This is F1 Debrief.
Nerd!
Coming up this week, we talk Premier League football, blue sky thinking, and stickering the world.
Hungary 2011 by Kai. In the rain, the cars twitched. They glided and slipped. Vettel went wide and Hammy went by, so at least Seb wasn't in the lead. Weber's start lacked any kind of attack. He pitted for softs and didn't go off, but he still only did come in fifth. Because Alonso got by and Button did fly, but at least Petrov didn't blow up. 6 points for Diresta, and that is his best. And Buemi got right up to eighth. With nonstop events, it was very intense, and I'm not sure that I want a break.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week and a bit for the McLaren boys, who beat the BBC in a pit stop challenge that was shown ahead of the Hungarian GP. They beat them in a battle of who could change a wheel faster, but it's pretty clear that the Beeb were at a disadvantage because they practiced on one side and then had to swap to the other side for the actual test, and Hamilton cheated.
Stewards' inquiry.
It's been a bad week for the Circuit of the Americas because they discovered the date of their Grand Prix next year has moved from its proposed summer slot. They found out by reading a translation from Bernie Ecclestone in the Italian media. That's a bit embarrassing. It's now slated for November the 18th, according to Bernie.
Way to run a business, Bernie Ecclestone.
It's been a good week for Sauber, who confirmed both Kamui Kobayashi and Sergio Perez for 2012. Both drivers admitted that it's been a difficult season so far this year, but that the continuity would help build a strong team. Reserve driver Esteban Gutierrez has also signed a contract extension.
I thought he was unhappy with Sauber. Has he got over that now?
I guess he must
have. He's fine. He's fine for next year.
It's been a bad week for Red Bull because they wanted to do a demo run in Austin. They took the car over there but couldn't get authorization to run it, so instead they were given permission to run on a closed set and they weren't allowed to shoot video. Several streets were closed for them, but no fans were allowed to watch.
Do we think the people of Austin are ready to welcome Formula One to their doorstep?
It does seem a bit odd.
Not today, thank you. That's a message I'm getting from Austin.
News and views.
We haven't done a show for a few weeks, and the big news that came out just around the Hungarian Grand Prix was the BBC and Sky deal.
Oh, is this Sky podcast breaking news?
Yeah.
Let's bring it to the people first and foremost on the ball. Side podcast, Sky and BBC, they're going to be hosting Formula One next year.
They're sharing duties.
You heard it here absolutely last.
But we're not trying to break news. And actually, I'm not sure there's that much to discuss because it's not going to change. It is going to happen. The BBC can't afford Formula One anymore and they still had a contract, so they decided to share it with Sky. That's the way it's going to be.
And your take on this is what?
Well, I think the reason most people are upset, aside from the fact that Sky is quite expensive, is that it seems like the team's promised free to air, and this isn't necessarily.
Mm.
Not that the BBC is completely free, because obviously there's a television license.
What is free in this
issue
world?
There, exactly. But also, I mean, some people have been saying, well, you can't expect free forever. You know, these things do have to be paid for.
Move and that, them times, roll with the punches.
That is understandable.
Any more cliches I can throw at it?
That is understandable. But having to get Sky is a massive barrier because there are issues whether you can have it in your house, whether you can get the dish on the side. It's a contract, so you've got to remain in the same place for a long time. There's a lot of things that have to fall into place for that to happen. It's not just about paying a bit of a fee.
Yes, agreed. I have not been the most complimentary about BBC's Formula One coverage since they took over from ITV. And it would be unfair of me to turn around and say this is terrible for Formula One, because actually I don't think the BBC have done a particularly good job. The best thing about the BBC is it doesn't have adverts and it is free to air. But beyond that, their production standards, the way they cover the sport, the people they talk to, an awful lot about it has been below par. Last year was particularly awful. They have improved this year to some degree. And for a long time, I've felt that really Formula One doesn't belong on the BBC. There was some talk that Channel 4 could have been a potential destination for the sport, but that hasn't happened, despite the fact that I think Bernie's trying to spin it so that he comes out looking good and the BBC come out looking bad.
Well, we know they put in a bid because we've seen the people took pictures of the brochure or something.
The guys behind who produced the brochure have put up their sales pitch.
But Bernie told the Daily Mirror, that familiar Formula One outlet, always reliable with their stories. He said the BBC had a contract in force already from 2012 all the way to 2014. They got to grips with Sky themselves. I spoke to ITV and they came up with the same problem Channel 4 had. The BBC contract didn't run out. So it's not like Channel 4. I think Channel 4 are complaining that they were ignored. But if the contract was already there, there's not much you could do about that.
Well, there is that. I mean, I don't think Channel 4 have any money. Now, we know from experience that when we started watching the eponymous television series Lost, it started on Channel 4 and they couldn't afford to keep it because Sky outbid them because Sky have more money than them. Channel 4 really don't have an awful lot of cash. I looked at the pitch and there's an awful lot of talk of archived material. You know, it's almost like Channel 4 asked the fans what their dream coverage would be like. And Channel 4 put together a presentation which detailed exactly that. You know, everything was designed to appeal to the fans. Without, it wasn't based in any form of reality that, you know, showed how they might intend to pay for this.
It sounds a bit like FOTA. I think they'd fit right in.
FOTA and Channel 4, they might go well together. Yeah, FOTA have been as spineless and useless as ever over this. They dithered. They put out some non-committal statements and then decided they didn't have a say as ever. In the process, and therefore, you know, they've been as useless to fans as anybody else, as we expect them to be.
Lots of people have made e-petitions and things, and they want it to be debated in the House of Commons.
There have been plenty of valiant efforts to try and change the situation. All credit to Formula One fans who feel like that, you know, they're being hard done by here. But I just don't think it's going to make much difference. Formula One is destined for pay TV. It was destined to go there when Bernie launched his original digital channel, but he was too ahead of his time. It was too early to make the move, and I think since then he's been keen to see it go that way. I'm looking forward to finding out what Sky do, because I love what they've done to football. They really gave football coverage a kick up the backside. Prior to Sky taking over football, you had this situation whereby all the games happened at the same time and you couldn't possibly watch them all, and since then the way they've commercialized it, they've made it so that fans can watch everything. They've given them, you know, a great service to the sport that is football in this country. If they do the same thing to Formula One, that might be something to behold. The question is, can we and other fans afford to enjoy that coverage? You know, if the coverage is fantastic next year, if they do a better job than the BBC and they do a better job than ITV have done in the past, that's going to be something to watch. You know, you don't want to miss out on that. But what if you can't afford to?
The BBC are offering, 10 races and extended highlights of the ones they're not showing live and things like that. But I think for us, really, it's all or nothing.
It has to be. We don't do things by halves. We're not going to watch 10 races on BBC next year, are we? That's not going to happen.
I don't want to see half a story.
No. We're either going to find a way to pay for Sky, which at the moment, that's a bit tricky. And we may have to move house in order that we can install a dish. Or I guess we just watch none of it and just say, stuff it. 10 races isn't enough. I mean, we have been arguing for a shorter calendar.
Yeah.
Forever. And we've definitely got that with the BBC. You've got the shortest Formula One calendar in living memory. But that's not the whole calendar. If there were just 10 races next season, I'd be happy with that. But there's 20 races next season and only 10 of them will be available on free to air. I'm sure people outside the UK couldn't give a stuff about this story and are frankly bored of hearing about it. So apologies for that. But I think from our point of view, it represents a opportunity.
It's a big turning point in the road. It's like a fork in the road.
Yes, it's certain that after the end of this season, everything is going to change. Now, whether you consider it's changing for the better or for the worse, it sort of depends on your point of view. I don't know what we're going to do. Do you have any plans for that?
I always said that I didn't want to get Sky, but as the weeks tick by, I'm actually thinking maybe there are some other things I could watch on Sky.
It's very tricky. Our biggest problem, I think, is that Sky isn't that expensive compared to the hosting costs for Sky Podcast. I mean, we pay out more every year just to keep this thing going than we would to get Sky. But the hosting costs plus Sky,
that's a whole other thing.
That's an awful lot of money to spend on a hobby. And that might be tricky. I do wonder if the whole side podcast business plan of making podcasts and giving them away for free on the internet might come unstuck at the end of this season.
If the business plan of giving Formula One away for free has come unstuck, it's no wonder. We're just going to have to follow suit and put it behind a contract paywall.
Watch this space. The times, they are a-changing.
There are football links littered throughout Formula One at the moment. I mean, you just said that Sky did football really well, so they might do the same thing.
Revolutionised football.
With the F1 coverage. Also, teams and team bosses are starting to try and take over at football as well, Premier League football.
Okay, but Bernie and Flav did this a long time ago.
Yes. The Premier League got started last week. There was opening games all over the place. And I think QPR, isn't it, that Flavio owned or had a share in?
Yes.
And so he was there at the match, sitting at the side.
We saw him.
Next to Tony Fernandez.
BFFs.
BFFs, yes. Except that QPR lost 4-0, which was quite embarrassing. And Flavio left.
Flavio went off home in a sulk, which is typical Flavio.
Yeah, that wasn't a surprise at all. But then, was it the next day or a couple of days later, it was announced that Tony Fernandez had bought out QPR.
The man knows no limits. I am such a fan of Tony Fernandez. How does he have time to do all of this?
He'll try his hand at anything.
He's what a star. There has been some criticism of him because he's a dyed-in-the-wool West Ham fan. And unfortunately, despite multiple offers to the team, they've turned him down at every instance. So now he's turned his attentions to QPR. But by doing that, he's bought out both Flavio and Bernie Eccleston of their shares. They are no longer involved in football.
No, he did a great dig at Briatore as well. There was a quote from him on the official QPR website that said, "Talk is easy, but I'm either 0 or 100% and I'm going to put my maximum into this. I'm very excited. Whether we win or lose, even if it's 4 or 5 one week," which it was, "I'll still be there to the end."
Unlike Flavio was.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And he has been tweeting about it a little bit, and he does seem very relaxed and just happy to let them do what they do.
And he's just like us, 0 or 100%.
Yeah.
He's either getting Sky or he's not watching F1. It's exactly the same.
You've got an affinity with Tony.
Me and Tone.
The other football news comes from the bitter rivals, Group Lotus, who have become a main sponsor, I think, of Norwich City.
Right, which is their local team, but also Team Lotus's local
team. Yeah.
So I'm not, I am, because I'm cynical of Danny Behar and his plans, I suspect partly he may have done that to annoy Tony, but I don't know. They might just be interested in sponsoring a football team.
It was announced first, but probably he knew what was going on.
I don't believe in those kind of coincidences, and I'm a cynic.
Qualifying.
Before the summer break, there was the Hungarian Grand Prix, and it turns out we haven't talked about that yet.
Can you remember what happened?
It was a few weeks ago, but I have delved into the Fact Box highlights to help me remember.
You've looked at your own highlights to remind yourself what happened.
That's what they're there for.
Is it?
Well,
that wasn't why you created them.
No, but it's a useful side effect. So in qualifying, there were a few things of note, although as always, it wasn't the most exciting part of the weekend. Sebastian Buemi, he went into qualifying with a 5-place grid drop. That's a penalty that he thought was too harsh to begin with.
This is for punting Nick Heidfeld off the road in Germany.
Yeah. And then he was the first driver the big name driver to drop out in Q1 as well. So that is a bad start to your weekend.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Maldonado, he got through to second qualifying, but he didn't bother to set a time. And then Perez, he got through to Q3. So he was in the top 10. I think it was the second time, because the last time was in Monaco where he had the big crash. So that was actually quite good.
Was it the first time did he complete a lap in Q3? He didn't set a time, did he?
He didn't set a time either. So that's two drivers not setting times.
Maybe he was nervous. Maybe he thought, you know, the Q3 jinx has come around again. I'm not going to risk it this time.
Massa out-qualified Alonso for the first time this year.
Well done, Mr. Massa.
It's now 10-1.
Oh. Well, you know, the fight back starts here. Massa on a comeback. Watch this space. Watch him in Spa.
Yeah, and I think Weber had some KERS issues and Vettel got pole, so that's all pretty standard. Paul Hembree, Pirelli boss, he's put forward the idea of qualifying tyres. He's put it to the teams and is waiting for their feedback.
I love Paul Hembree.
Getting involved again.
Paul Hembree is solving Formula One one decision at a time.
Single-handedly.
He's just picking off the things he doesn't like about it. He's throwing suggestions out there. He's getting fans behind him. He's building up momentum. He's just solving problems left, right and centre. So
do you think that's a good idea?
I like Formula One qualifying tyres seem like a fine idea. A tyre with a very, very tiny scope for performance, in which, you know, it's up to the driver to get the absolute maximum out of that tyre. It will play into the hands of aggressive drivers, I think. The problem you have with the tyres at the moment, it favours the likes of someone like Jenson Button, who's light on his tyres, or the Sauber car, which is very light on its tyres. And if you're an aggressive person, your style it's not working so well for you this year. And qualifying tyres might even that balance out, because you've got someone who can get the most out of a tyre over one lap, and then you've got somebody who can get the most out of a tyre over a race distance. And that to me seems, that's a good thing to fix. It might make qualifying slightly more entertaining, and God knows we need that.
Yeah.
I'll take anything you got to throw at qualifying right now to make that more entertaining. So I'm up for this. If Pirelli can afford to do it, if the teams like the sound of it, and it doesn't, there's no, as far as I know, there shouldn't be any too much in the way of safety implications.
I do wonder if it isn't something that it might be too expensive. And it certainly doesn't seem, in a world where F1 wants to be green, building a tyre specifically to last for two laps doesn't seem like a good idea. It doesn't seem like something that the general public would necessarily understand and get behind.
That is a risk. But I'm guessing they will be taking less of another tyre to the circuit. So
yeah. In
theory, you should build the same amount. There has been a drive, or there's in the past we've seen the FIA do their best to slow down Formula One cars, the introduction of groove tyres, lots of regulation changes to make sure cars don't go any quicker. I think qualifying tyres would make a car something like two seconds a lap faster for that one period. That's a massive boost, and I don't know whether somewhere like Monaco is really ready for that. So as long as it depends on what, there needs to be an evaluation of whether safety will be a concern if cars are suddenly going that much quicker. If there isn't, then I'm all for it.
Couldn't you just make the qualifying tyre a slower tyre anyway?
In what, so that it's just a, well, that's true. I don't know if that's what he's proposing, but a slow tyre that drops off after two laps.
Is that possible? I don't know.
I'm not a tyre scientist. No, I don't know. That may work too. What you really want to do is make cars go for a time. That's what we're missing.
All it really needs is everyone on the same set of tyres, so they don't have to choose between the two compounds, and the tyres they're on have nothing to do with the race either, so they don't have to necessarily save them. And that's all you really need. It doesn't have to be a set that only lasts for two laps.
Either way, I think it would add another dimension to Formula One. I'd like them to try it for a year. If it doesn't work, fine. They gave it a shot. If it does work, Paul Hemmer's a hero. Well, he's already a hero to me.
You're just full of love today. We've got Tony Fernandez and Paul Hemmer.
I've had it's a summer break. I'm relaxed. I'm chilled out. There's a lot of love in the air.
The race. On to the race then. And all the focus before the start was on the weather, because it was raining.
Oh no, not another safety car start. Please tell me.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't too bad. I think the rain had stopped before the start, but the track was wet, so that was the ideal conditions, really.
Thank goodness for that. That was the last thing I wanted to see. It was, the conditions set up the race perfectly, didn't it? It was a fantastic variable to keep people on their toes before action got underway.
Not that I can't remember the race or anything, but what was your favourite bit?
I shall tip my hat to McLaren for letting their drivers race. That's what I like to see. That's what we need to see more of. Implicit trust in their drivers not to crash into each other. And the drivers didn't let them down. What a fantastic battle.
Also, it wasn't just battling between each other. It was battling for the lead.
Yeah, for the lead of the race. For the position that matters most in inclement conditions, changeable weather. There was strategy at play. Obviously, the pit wall were doing their best to make the right calls at the right times, whilst the drivers were doing their best to make sure they were in the prime position for whatever the right call might be at the right time. I very, very much loved watching the fight for the lead. I forget how many laps it was. It was only maybe 5-10 laps, but they were fantastic laps that will live on in my mind for as long as I will be able to remember. It was brilliant. I really loved what was going down there. There was, no questionable moves at all. They were doing, they were fighting the car at every step of the way, both of them in the same equipment, both of them having the same problems. It was just amazing to watch.
Yeah, so 1 minute Hamilton was in the lead, the next it was Button, Hamilton in the lead, that kind of thing. But from the lead, Hamilton's race went very, very wrong.
Unfortunately, the blame lies with the pit wall. It's easy to say now. At the time, I thought they made the right call. Lewis Hamilton had problems getting temperature into his tyres. Lewis was absolutely to blame for, he spun the car and then decided to correct the spin into traffic.
Yeah. I think that's one of those things where it's like, well, what else could he have done? He probably panicked. He was spinning the wrong way. He wanted to do his best, that kind of thing. I mean, he sort of said he couldn't see the other cars coming, but he really should have just waited.
Absolutely. I mean, there was no question. The guy could have looked. He could have waited for a gap in the traffic. The car hadn't stalled. There was no reason to make a snap decision to spin the car around. It was immediately, I think we called it when the incident happened. We said there would be a steward's inquiry because, you know, spinning into traffic, Paul de Resta pushed off the track. Not a good move. And that set up, that ruined the afternoon, didn't it? It ruined the afternoon of racing because that led to a drive-through penalty, which then put Lewis farther back. And the lead, the fight for the lead was over at that point.
We do have a voicemail on this subject today. Perhaps we'll hand over to Davin.
I've only got a few quick things I want to bring up. First of all, yes, go Jensen Button. Yes. What? Yes. Knew you could do it. Conditions played out perfect for you. I love watching Jensen win because I love watching his driving. I mean, it is so smooth and so collected and measured, and just it's awesome. Second of all, I want to reach out to McLaren and say that I should be working for them because I made that call that he should stay out on slicks before they did. So clearly, McLaren strategist and I are thinking the same thing, and I should go over there and work for them.
I don't think I would want to be any kind of strategist.
We've seen it before. It happened again here. Jensen Button made the call. He said after the race, I made the call to ignore the team strategists. They told me to come in, to follow Lewis into the pits and to queue up behind him. And I knew I wasn't going to do that. And that decision saved McLaren's bacon. That saved their afternoon. That decision gave Jensen the race win. The McLaren pit wall made the wrong call. They said, come in, Lewis. Come in, Jensen. Lewis trusted his crew. And nine times out of ten, I suspect that probably is the right thing to do because they have all the data. They've got people number crunching back in Woking. You know, they've got more information than Lewis has in the cockpit. But Jensen rolled the dice and he came up looking smarter.
Well, I wonder if, if I was Button, I probably wouldn't trust the crew considering that they ruined his race two races in a row before that.
Fair point. He probably didn't want to go anywhere near the guy with the wheel gun. Again, Jensen comes out of it looking like the smart guy. He could judge the conditions. He made the call. He overrode the decision from the pits. He's the hero. And Lewis, who was having a brilliant, brilliant race until that point, on the roll of that dice, he drops down to where did he finish? Like fifth position or something, which is a great, it's a great finish considering how bad a latter half of the race he had. He kept his head down and he got, he ended up where he did. But in the end, his teammate got the win and he looks like the hero.
Hamilton did serve his drive-through. And I think you pointed out at the time that his brother, Nick Hamilton, he popped his head out into the pit lane to watch Hamilton go past. And he didn't have any fireproof stuff on or overalls or...
Indeed, that was odd. I'm not sure how he got away with that, how McLaren didn't end up with another penalty. For letting him do that. Nobody, as far as I could see, called him back in. And the guy was just wandering around in a sleeveless shirt. And considering he's a racing driver, I mean, he knows these things.
He
should know these things. He shouldn't be doing that. He felt the need to go out there and show solidarity with his brother. But that's not the place to do it.
There were lots of weird things happening in the pit lane. I particularly liked, only because nothing bad came of it, but Jerome D'Ambrosio, he spun into his pit box.
Handbrake turn.
Thankfully, no mechanics were hurt because that could have been really bad. But it was like those old cop films you see where they spin into a parking space.
Haven't seen that happen. It must have happened in Formula One history in the past. D'Ambrosio, he's turning into a bit of a Degrassi, isn't he?
Don't say that.
The season and he's not shining. And so that could have been, that could have gone very, very seriously bad very quickly. That was in the lap of the gods. He was not in control of that car. I don't know how he did it. It was a wet pit lane, but nobody else managed to do it.
No. Also, weird things happened with Renault because Heidfeld stopped for his pit stop and already coming out of the stop, it looked a bit weird. And he only just got to the exit of the pit lane when his car caught fire and he had to do a ninja leap out of the car for the second time this year. But the really worrying thing was that once the marshals were there trying to put the fire out, then there was a second explosion.
Secondary explosion, yes. So firstly, following the race, Eric Boullier seemed to insinuate that Nick Heidfeld was at fault for revving his car on the jacks. That was the suggestion that was made. Because I think there was an issue with the pit stop and the lollipop was flipped over, told him to engage first and to, you know, rev the engine, and then the car didn't come down off the jacks. So for whatever reason, the engine was overheating, the car was overheating, and the guy was revving the nuts out of it. They lowered the car from the jacks finally, and then it started to fall to pieces in spectacular fashion. And before it finally ate itself.
Yeah, he did say that almost immediately afterwards. But then once they'd looked into it, they came out with this whole list of excuses, like in practice something had happened and they tried to switch the thing over, and then they think a crack had emerged, and then in the pit stop it had got bigger, and then that's why.
Which are just words.
Yeah, it's like one thing after another, no specific reason.
The facts remain, twice this year, the Renault team have tried to mount Nick Heidfeld. When the car caught fire, the secondary explosion was significantly, you know, seriously dangerous.
It hit a marshal.
I think most teams, did I read most teams put the canister that exploded into a safer position, and Renault have opted for aerodynamic reasons to put it near a very, very hot forward-facing exhaust, which seems like a really stupid idea now that we understand what happened. The exhaust they're using aren't giving them the performance they earned at the beginning of the year. It sounds like a disaster waiting to happen. And Nick is, you know, if Nick Heidfeld gets back in that car in Spa, he's a braver man than I am, because I wouldn't want to sit in front of those fire-breathing exhausts for one more second than I had to. And any man who gets in that Renault, that's a brave man. You know, who wants to sit that close to red-hot exhausts, which have a habit of catching fire with the regularity that they do?
It is weird that both times it's happened to Heidfeld. I don't know if there's something different that he is doing, or just a different way of style of
Could
driving
be.
Or something like that.
Interesting. Don't know.
Not that that is his fault, but they need to look into that, why it's both times it's been Heidfeld.
It's not a safe design. The design has to go.
Hey, Chris T and Mr. C. This is Jordan calling from Kamloops, BC, Canada. In general, I thought the race was pretty good. It was a drama-filled race. Congrats to Jenson Button on winning the race. You know, not a fan of the guy, really, but, you know, good for him, you know. I thought the different conditions were really interesting, how we saw, you know, guys make the strategy. The first pit stops, we saw the guys like Weber, who came in first, really benefited on getting the dry tires on quicker. And so when guys like Alonso and Hamilton came in and Vettel, they struggled a lot more. Honestly, a little surprised Button won. I was actually really thinking Fernando Alonso was going to win with the strategy they had going there. I know that sounds a little crazy, but I actually really thought they would maybe pull through for the win.
I think Alonso spent more time off the track recovering than he did on the track.
I think both Ferraris did.
Massa certainly damaged the rear of his car. Subsequently managed to get himself the fastest lap.
He did a great five Massa spins type spin. It was brilliant. Yes. Round and round he went.
Yes, took a chunk out of his rear wing, went faster than ever before. How does that work out?
He got the fastest lap of the race.
Yep.
With a
damaged car.
Right.
Faster than his superior teammate. You know, and nobody, as far as I know, knows how he did it. Maybe you can improve that Ferrari by lobbing a great big hole out of the left rear end plate of its car. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe, just maybe, Massa felt slightly guilty about nearly throwing his car off the road and ending the race. That he might have put his foot down.
Yeah.
And tried a bit harder. That also possibly might have happened.
He didn't want to waste the one time he qualified ahead.
It was a great qualifying session. And then, yeah, he throws it away with a silly spin. There was a time, I mean, Alonso threw it off the road and Massa managed to take the place back. I really thought it was going to be a strong race for Massa. It turned out to be okay after he'd, you know, done the damage and lost the car.
Heidfeld was obviously one retiree. Schumacher also retired quietly. He just pulled off to the side of the road, no fuss. But it was also a double Lotus DNF.
Because of what was their problems?
I can't remember. But two cars not getting to the end of the race. That hasn't happened for a while and doesn't bode well for their we're going to get into the points this season.
That's true. Yann Attree was back in the car, though.
Yes. He did like his new car with its new power steering and everything.
Yes, we were worried with it. Was it the previous race, wasn't it? Karen Chandhok took Trulli's seat, unusually.
We weren't worried.
I was worried for Trulli's career. I thought,
really?
I genuinely thought that was. I mean, Trulli remained adamant that he was going to get back in the car. If Karun put it, you know, had put in a good performance,
If, a big if.
Yeah, if that had happened, you know, I wasn't expecting to see Trulli come back. But not only did he come back, he comes back with a car that he likes.
He did seem, throughout the whole thing, though, Trulli did seem very calm about it. And he said that, he said to the BBC that it really was just because he didn't like this car. He was waiting for the new car with the new power steering, so he might as well give it to Chandok, who's going to get as much out of it as he would have.
That's a fair point. It's not been the season I expected for Lotus. Now is the time when they give up with this year, right? They give up, they concentrate on next year because they've got the Red Bull rear package. They've got the decent Renault engine. There's no reason why they shouldn't be faster than they are. Failing almost in every way to live up to expectations, it's time to knock it on the head and move on.
So much so, the boss has turned his attention to football.
It's more exciting and more interesting. You've got to feel for the team, but they've got to work harder.
Also at the back, Disco Dan, he managed to finish ahead of Liuzzi, so that's good, beating his teammate already.
Do we have a word for Dan this week?
We do. Davin has sent us a word for Daniel's day out.
Improved.
I can't argue with that. He finished in front of Liuzzi. That's all you can ask for that man in that car. That's impressive. And if I was Liuzzi, I'd be worried.
Whilst we're doing our one-word reviews, I suppose we could have a look at Paul's performance report from Stephen.
Established.
Another one we can't really argue with. He certainly seems like he's been in that paddock forever.
He didn't panic either when he saw Lewis, you know, spinning like a spinny top towards him. he didn't panic. He took to the grass, but he never lost sight of what he was doing. I think it was a great run for Paul Arrester.
Hi, this is London, first time caller, very part time contributor on the comments. I'm setting up just following the kind of follow up on the race, Lee McKenzie, etc. interview with Hamilton. And how they're going on about his decision to change on the Inters was the one that cost him the race, when in reality it was obviously McLaren or his decision to put him onto the option tyre as opposed to the prime, the pit stop. At that point, he had to pit anyway. Before the race, he had no chance of winning it once he was on that tyre when everyone else was quicker, and he had to stop again. So the option to go onto the intermediates was actually not a gamble at all, but probably his only chance of winning the race by being on the right tyre if the conditions did hold out when everyone else had to pit as well.
Hi guys, Dicky here. Sud Hungarian Grand Prix. I mean, I thought Canada was the best race we could get this year, but that was something else. That was, oh my God, that was awesome. And what a win. What a win for Jensen. Just so, so awesome to watch. And I enjoyed every second of that. I mean, Ruben finished. That's amazing. You do not know how happy I am that Ruben's actually finished the race. And his car didn't break down. It's amazing. I mean, he came from like 2012. I don't know. But yeah, what a race, man. We're really being treated this year. Just treated so much. Now, I mean, we still got Spa to come. Whew. I like 2011.
What a fantastic collection of voicemails following the Hungarian Grand Prix. Let's hope we have more of this for Spa.
Yep, 01212887225. Or you can email MP3s to christine@sipodcast.com. We have one final voicemail from someone who always seems to call when Jensen Button does well. Funny that.
Hi, Sipodcast. It's Dom from the past again. I was going to call in and be all angry about the BBC Sky deal, but my anger has been diluted somewhat by the brilliant race result today, with Jensen winning again, a fully deserved race win, which is fantastic, and a brilliant race as well. And actually, I would make a suggestion to Mr. C with his Rate the Race thingy, because he's painted himself in a corner here. Maybe give this 11 or 12 out of 10, because I really don't think 10 out of 10 would do it justice. Fantastic race, a fantastic result. I'm so happy that Jensen won that race, and also a brilliant result for Paul DeVester, despite Lewis doing his best to finish his race.
Dom from the past! I want Dom. Here's a challenge for Dom from the past. Call us when Jensen Button's had a terrible race.
Yeah. Or just a nondescript race. He mentioned that perhaps your Rate the Races so far have been a bit misguided. I guess it's time for some Rate the Race action. How are you going to do this time?
That's a good question, because the time that we've given between watching the race and recording the podcast is exceptionally long.
Yeah.
And therefore my enthusiasm, which may, you know, follow from a race, you know, the endorphins in my brain and all the things that build up that excitement have obviously tailed off long ago. And I'm now into like chilled out summer break mode.
Been asleep many times since then.
So on that grounds, I'm going to give it a 2. No. No, that would be unfair.
Oh, the people. They would revolt.
Goodness me. I'd never live that down. I have it. It's so close in my mind to the German Grand Prix. There was so much going on, but you could keep up with all of it. You know, there was enough action, but not too much action. There were spins, there were controversies, there was things to discuss after the race. I really liked it. I don't know how to vote it. I don't know how to rate this. What did I give the German Grand Prix? Was it 9.8?
Yeah. Because you like to irritate me.
What about 9.85? 9.85. It's just marginally better than the German Grand Prix. Just by a whisker.
Right. Well, I'm going to rate it 9 because I think I gave Germany an 8. I wasn't 100% impressed.
You were confused by Germany. I recall there was a lot going on that it was hard to keep up with. There was more strategy. You see, I like strategy.
I like it, but sometimes it all depends on how much I'm concentrating on watching it, what I'm doing on the fact bike back box, how well I can get into it if something distracts me, that kind of thing. And if I lose the plot at one point, then I get really annoyed.
I will go on record and say that was the best Hungarian Grand Prix I have ever seen.
Wow.
Hungary is normally a disaster. Occasionally, you get a good race amongst the many. But I very much think that was the greatest Hungarian Grand Prix I've ever seen. It's, at least as far as I can remember. I'm sure somebody will dig something up from the distant past when there was a close battle for the finish or whatever. But genuinely, that was my favourite Hungarian Grand Prix ever. Expected it to be a snoozer. It was wild.
It does seem like we always expect Hungary to be boring, and it really hasn't been. Well, but there's always something. I mean, there was the Massa accident, which obviously isn't great racing or anything, but it was something that made the weekend stand out. And there's always something going on.
There was a time when Hungary was one of the worst circuits on the Grand Prix calendar, and then Herman Tilke came along, and he really showed us what a bad circuit could be like. And so we appreciate Hungary more for what it is.
It was the worst. Now it's somewhere in the middle. Yeah. Did I actually say what I was rating it? I don't think you gave me 8. A chance. I'm rating it a 9.
I thought you said 8.
No, I gave Germany an 8. Thanks for paying attention. So next up is...
Who are you?
Driver of the day. Or driver of the day that was quite a few weeks ago. Who are you going to give it to?
Man, we haven't spoken about, actually, apart from, well, we know we mentioned him in qualifying, but not in the race. Sebastian Buemi, where did he start? 23rd?
Yeah, 23rd and quite miffed about it.
An annoyed 23rd.
Yeah.
Came in, where did he finish the point? 7th?
He finished 8th.
8th
so
place.
Picked up some points. That's do have a habit of doing this, these Toro Rosso.
For a car that hasn't showed an awful lot of pace, it's a shadow of the championship leading car on which it's based. But somehow they still manage to get into the points. And that's
only when they start really far back. If they start in the middle, nothing doing.
It's almost like the motivation. I mean, was it Ardeshwari? Did I give Driver of the Day? Was that the last race when he came from the back to the front? His teammate did it again.
He's done it twice. Buemi's done it now. It's very odd.
I'm going to give it to Buemi. We barely saw... Well, we saw some of his race. I did like it when he was involved in a four-car queue. It got unravelled in a DRS zone, and all sort of chaos kicked up at the back there.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that one. I think he did well. He kept a cool head. Jaime made a mistake. He was in front of him.
Passed his teammate out on track, which is always a good thing to do.
It was fantastic. I'm going to give Driver of the Day to Sebastian Buemi for showing resolve under pressure.
Good. Well, I am going to give mine to Jenson Button because, yes, he won the race, blah de blah, but also because he really likes cake.
I love cake, so I'm hoping someone's going to give me a cake. Went for dinner last night and the boys sorted me out with a cake, which is nice. And then we got another cake at the hotel, so I'm already 2 cakes up, hoping for another cake today.
Well, we'll get baking. Thanks very much.
You can't give your Driver of the Day to a man who likes cake because he likes cake.
Well, I'm sure that must have been a bet because no one can fit cake into that that short a speech that many times. It's
okay,
crazy.
Is he really your Driver of the Day? Are you serious?
Yeah.
And that is your reason for giving it to him?
Well, he did win the race as well and all that stuff. Made the right calls at the right time. No, I don't really care about that. I like the cake. Feedback. Some little bits of feedback this week. First up from Clive in Norwich, who says, "Hey, Christine and Mr. C, I'll be honest, I hadn't really noticed a lack of Ted at the German Grand Prix, but after you pointed it out on the last debrief, it was interesting to note every point he made, and even Martin Brundle was glad Ted was back for the weekend. Here's hoping Sky have a place for him in their coverage next year." That's from Clive.
We haven't speculated on the lineups. There's too many unknowns to speculate too much about the BBC.
Well, it's also confused because the BBC is still going to be doing bits, and are they going to be doing bits with their own team? Are they just going to send some people?
It makes
to some
no
races?
Sense.
It's hard to speculate.
Yeah, it does. It just makes no sense for the BBC to have a permanent crew that only go to half the races. That just won't work. So every single finger I have crossed that Ted Kravitz. And, you know, if you listen to the show, do the same for us now. Cross your fingers and you're listening and say, let's hope that Ted Kravitz, he gets a chance to move to Sky.
If he wants to.
He doesn't get a say in this.
Oh, right. Okay. We're
no one asked Ted.
Right. My mistake.
We expect of him to be there in the pit lane doing his Ted thing. Formula One wouldn't be the same without him. If Ted doesn't go to Sky, it's not worth £60 a race.
Well, if he doesn't go to Sky, we'll have to seriously consider the side pod whip round to send him there on our behalf.
Interesting. See, it's all these unknowns. You cannot make a decision yet. I don't know when you will be able to make a decision, but it's too early to say right now.
They really need to start announcing some things before anything concrete can be decided.
I'm going to bet January before we hear very much concrete.
Next up, a message from David who says, Dear Christine, with excitement and anticipation, I downloaded the new F1 Minute app, or attempted to do so. My iPhone is so old, the app won't work on it. Regardless, determined to support SciPodcast in some small way, I purchased the application and gave it a 5-star rating on iTunes. It dawned on me that the purpose of my purchase had changed from utility to support. At that point, 99 cents seemed parsimonious. I don't actually know what that means, but moving on. I marched virtually to Amazon and purchased both of your books. Of course, I rarely read books. You and Mr. C somehow convinced me to purchase an app I can't use and two books I won't read, such is your power. The world is lucky you use it wisely. Many thanks for all the time and effort you put into podcasts, Felipe Baby and the rest of your empire. Regards, David in Baltimore. He said, P.S. Perhaps Mr. C could use some of his power to make the contact us area easy to find.
Get out of here.
P.P.S. Sorry, that was unwarranted.
David, you reach so high in my estimation, yet you fall so far so fast.
David's my new favourite.
Right, let's start at the beginning. Appreciate it. Well, but also slightly insane.
Surely there is no iPod too old to run the app.
Yeah, you need iOS 4.3. Oh. And if you have an iPhone 1 or an iPod Touch version 1, I guess they can't be upgraded to 4.3.
Fair enough.
So that he's correct. There is a limitation. To be honest with you, I wasn't expecting too many people to use it, so we haven't really mentioned it. And he may well be the first person to have this trouble. I don't know.
But we really appreciate the support. Also, we had a message from...
Buying a book and not reading it, though.
Well, that is weird. But then maybe one day he'll just be, you know, it'll be a rainy day, and what shall I do today? Oh, I've got that book, and he'll enjoy it.
Can I just say that if you're trying to do what David has very kindly tried to do, which is to support SciPodcast, buying an app and a book... It's probably not the most logical way to go about it, because Apple takes 35% and then the government take 20%, and we only end up with, I think, 30 pence an app.
There is a donate button on the homepage if that's...
And I think PayPal take 1% of that.
Another David, who also has been supporting us, said, just bought both your books on iTunes, cannot wait to dig into part one tomorrow at work. And then he put 9 exclamation marks.
That's
so he's
a big fan.
Really excited about that. At least that David... is going to read the books, so that's good.
That's good. On the subject of books and apps, 2 things to mention. I don't recall coming back to this subject, so if I've said this in a previous show, I do apologise. We recorded them ages ago, and I can't even remember what I did last week.
Like I said, you've slept many times since the last time we did a show. We can't be expected to remember that.
No,
stuff.
So first thing to mention is we asked for feedback about the app, and we've got lots and lots and lots of great feedback on iTunes. Suggestions for improvements, things that people think they're missing out on, things they'd like to see.
I've
all
got some.
Been noted. You've got some feedback?
Yeah.
To read out?
No.
You've got some things you'd like to see in the app?
Yep.
Keep it to yourself for the moment.
Okay.
It's on the list. Anyway, we asked for feedback. We got loads of feedback. Nothing that's been suggested is impossible, so it's likely we can introduce everything that people want as soon as we've got time to do it. So that's good. Thanks for that. The reviews for the books have been less, though, and I'd like to encourage anybody who's had time to read the book.
People are buying them and not reading them, apparently.
Well, that could be the problem. But if you've had time to read the book, it would be great if you could leave a review on Amazon or iTunes. That would mean a lot. I know that you can't review a book until you've read it, whereas you can review an app after only a few minutes of use. You know, it's a different thing to review. But it's useful. It does mean a lot. As a non-writer, I actually don't know if you're a very good author until people give you feedback. You see, you could be terrible, and if people aren't saying that you're terrible, how will I ever know? So I'm relying on the listeners and the people who buy the books to provide Amazon reviews and iTunes reviews to let us know if you're actually any good.
There is one way you could know.
Read the book.
Yeah.
But I can't tell what a good author is or a bad author is, you see. There's lots of people out there who read a lot. I don't read very much. I read about as much as David. What I'm talking about is people who read books and who know stuff about books to take the time to review this, because the reaction has been less so than the app. There's been a lot of keen people with suggestions for the app, and there's been a handful of reviews on the books. And so I'd like to see more of those. If people have the time, it would be much appreciated.
You want more feedback for my book, and I want more feedback for the show, because I really like the feedback section. You can email me, christine@sidepodcast.com, or you can find the contact form, which is at sidepodcast.com/about.
Can I let you in on a secret?
Yes, please.
The submission process, you may not like it. I wouldn't sound too happy about this secret. But the submission process for getting an app onto the iTunes App Store requires a certain amount of conditions are met. And one of those conditions, I may not have mentioned to you, is that you have a contact form on your website on its own. And so if you typed into your browser, if you're listening to this near a computer and you type in www.f1minute.com/contact, you might find there are contact details on F1 Minute in a place where you expect them to be. And still, I haven't got around to doing it on the side podcast. I do apologise, but I couldn't get the app submitted without it. And it's just reminded me.
I'm not talking to you anymore.
Housekeeping.
We have already plugged the book and the app, so if you have any spare pennies, please do check out the app and the book.
Mm-hmm. Read the app and use the book. That's not right.
No, the other way around. It's called the F1 Minute app, and it's called 365 F1 Stories. If you search anywhere, you'll probably find those things. Whilst we're on the subject of F1 Minute, we do have some stickers.
We do. Oh, did we mention this on the show? I vaguely remember we did.
I think we have mentioned the stickers and how they appeared in various places at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. But now we are giving away the stickers to people that want them. And there's a post on Side Podcast, which is weird because it's about F1 Minute.
Yeah, but it's a community thing.
Yeah. And all you have to do is put in your details there, possibly donate a little bit of money if you feel so inclined.
If you can help us with the postage,
it does help.
That would make a difference.
It does help cover the cost of postage, and it covers the expense of my trip to the post office. I had to go to an actual post office. It was very odd.
You sent them thus far. We've had a great response, actually. Yep. They've gone to all corners of the globe.
I sent out, I think it was 20 envelopes in the first batch, and really went to at least 10 different countries. It was amazing.
Far and wide, these F1 Minute stickers are spreading. If you've got yours, thank you for requesting them, and do take some pictures when you stuck them.
Yeah, let us know what you do with them. And if you want some, we'll put a link to the post in the show notes, and you can just put your contact details in the form there. Or I suppose you could use the contact form
on the About page.
Yeah, weird.
Can we talk about my new bear?
I suppose so.
I have a new bear.
Do you?
Yeah, Mercedes bear.
Mercedes, is that what you're calling it?
No, Lou's calling him Ant.
Because he looks a bit like Anthony Davidson?
Well, he's short like Anthony Davidson, and also he works for Mercedes in an unknown capacity.
Right.
So basically it's Anthony Davidson, really,
isn't
it?
That does make a lot of sense.
So it's Ant the Mercedes bear.
Okay. And this came about because Mercedes posted some pictures of their Mercedes bear that they sell in the shop, doing a variety of tasks around the garage.
They've taken him on tour, a bit like Alex took Cookie Monster last year. Mercedes are doing the same with Mercedes bear this year.
And you saw the pictures and then you just had to
have one. I wanted one. So I bought one.
It arrived the next day after you ordered
it. It arrived faster than their cars do.
Yeah. And why are you telling me about your bear? You just wanted to boast about it.
I like the bear. He's a mascot. You know, we've got the panda mascot.
Yeah.
And we've got the Babenda mascot.
You know, we have more mascots than hosts.
We're outnumbered.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's listener feedback time, and I have news for you. Did you know that we are at war right now?
I did not.
Right, well,
I didn't even bring my uniform.
Somehow, Twitter has gotten us, someone who's apparently named Merkin Muffley.
What? That's not a real name.
Has gotten us involved in a flame war, minus the F, so it's a lame war.
What is a flame war?
Merkin is trying to start something between us and Side Podcast.
Full name one more time?
Merkin Muffley. So he's trying to start stuff.
This is the worst flame war ever.
Neither our podcast nor Side Podcast, which, by the way, is a brilliant sort of website and podcast and everything.
I listened to their F1 Minute a couple of times. It seems interesting.
I'm in awe of how much just time and effort they put into. They've got so many different features on their website.
Do they make money?
Probably. I don't know.
We should.
They're maybe just.
We should have like a flame conversation with them.
Right.
Be like, hey,
they might be better at everything we do than us, except being American and having interesting things to say about.
I think we got that locked down.
Right. So the attempt to get us into a war with Side Podcast ultimately failed because I'm like, hey, you guys have a cool podcast, and they're like, hey, so do you guys.
So I'm, nerd.
Yeah. So sorry, we couldn't have more fireworks than that, but. You know, I guess if anyone's not aware of Side Podcasts, I don't know how you would be if you follow F1 Podcasts, then you can check them out. You know,
well, don't plug them, for Christ's sakes.
Okay, don't check them out.
Thank you.
If anyone subscribes to Side Podcasts, stop subscribing to them.
No, don't do it. No, I don't know. I mean, again, if you can like Side Podcasts and also like us and you have the time to listen to both of us, by all means, listen to both of us.
Right. Listen to both of us and decide what you want to do, because I don't want people to listen to us just because we told them not to listen to anyone else. I want them to listen to us because we have a good show, and I think we have a good show.
I think they have a great show. That was F1show.com. You have to listen. If you haven't experimented beyond Side Podcast with your podcast, you know, we encourage you to listen to another F1 podcast who started the Lame War. And now I'm encouraging you to listen to F1show.com because they
got roped into the Lame War by accident. I don't even understand how it happened.
Merkin Muffley. Love it. Yeah, do check it out. F1show.com. I love them. They're great. All sorts of good stuff. And they did their Hungarian podcast way before us.
Talking about online disagreements and things, although to a much lesser extent than a lame war, we posted, it was the Viva F1 swap shop over the summer.
It kept us occupied all summer. Fantastic work from the guys at VivaF1.com.
Yeah. So the idea is people write posts for other websites and everyone swaps and you get to see...
Blog swap.
Yeah, you get to see new writers, you get new commenters, it's all very good. So we hosted a couple of posts, and one of them was by Stitch, who wrote a three-part sort of mid-season driver review type thing, and pretty much everyone disagreed.
It caused chaos. What I love about Stitch's post is it's everything the Side Podcast is not. So it was very pro-Vettel. It was very anti, was it anti-Jensen Button, anti-Lotus, I think Heikki Kovalainen got a right drubbing, something I don't think we've ever done on Side Podcast ever. And so it was almost as if, you know, all of our opinions were just thrown to one side and opposing opinions were put on Side Podcast. And I think it sort of took people by surprise, and it was great to watch. It was great to see people react.
Well, it was great, but I do wonder that, I mean... Side Podcast has always sort of prided itself on being a place where everyone can share their opinions and no one is told off for that, and good healthy debate happens. And I don't know if this is a Side Podcast thing or an online thing, but it does seem that is less and less likely. It seems people are so quick to be like, no, you're wrong, this is wrong, I don't agree with you and I don't like it.
Yes. It's very interesting to see how many people are more likely to comment if they disagree with something than if they do agree with something.
Well, yeah, that's like always been
negative leads positive. It's a shame. I mean, everywhere I look on the internet now, comments on whatever the topic just seems to be disintegrating in usefulness.
Especially if it's a subjective thing like a driver review, that should be something that could cause healthy debate, but it seems like that is less and less likely.
Fallen to pieces. It has. We've had all sorts of conversations in the comments about where we're going to go with the future of Side Podcast commenting, and I think there's going to be lots of changes coming up soon. But for the moment, I just like that, you know, someone can come along and just throw a hand grenade.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Into the comments and watch the reaction. Who was the other? Was it James wrote the other guest post?
Yeah, that was very on the flip side, that was quite a popular one.
I mean, that went into an awful lot of detail of things that we don't normally touch.
Yeah.
It was history.
About engines and turbo things that I wouldn't have a clue about.
No, that was good. So the guest post, Viva's blog swap, is a fantastic idea. We encourage more of it. I hope they get to do more in the off season. And I really like that, you know, there's things that we wouldn't be interested in ending up on Side Podcast and things we disagree with ending up on Side Podcast. It's all good stuff.
I think that's exactly what it should be, the blog swap.
Mm. Very good. Highly recommended. Link in the show notes.
I'll link to the, there's a bit.ly bundle of all the posts that were written for other people. And so I'll link to that.
A great reaction. It's good to see people writing. Good to see people filling in their summer break, because it has been quiet on the F1 front in the summer break. We haven't helped that at all, but thankfully other people have.
We have been quite quiet. Obviously, it's taken us, whatever it is, a month, four weeks to
get
this show out.
We've been busy, though.
We have been very busy. There are new and exciting things always in the pipeline. Are we going to take another 4 weeks before the next show?
No, it's Spanx.
Ah, it was just a summer break thing.
We still have lots to do. We have lots of things boiling in the background. We've got a lot of pans on the go, I think.
Or spinning plates and things like that.
It's very much like that.
More clichés. This is brilliant.
It's a show of terrible clichés. There's a lot to come, and somehow we've got to make more time to fit more stuff in and decide what we're going to do in the future. And obviously we need to know about Sky's plans and what they're going to do. And there's all sorts of changes going on. But we will be back. Never fear. I know that a lot of people were worried that we had gone on a mini hiatus when we didn't come up with
the Hungarian debrief? Country. Where's the Hungry podcast? Where is it? What are you doing? Bring it back.
Yes.
Where's it gone?
At least people listen. At least Absolutely. People care. That's the thing. Can I say a huge thanks to Kai, who opened this show?
Yes. Brilliant poem. Lovely. I like poetry.
We encourage more poetry?
Yeah.
More F1 poetry for Spa, please. I don't know what's going to happen in the next race. There's talk that it may not rain at Spa. I can't believe that.
Nonsense.
Not in this Formula One season. Not at Spa. I'm sure it will be chaos. I'm sure we will love it. And I'm sure we'll come back with a podcast following that race.
Yeah. Stay tuned to sidepodcast.com for all the live threads and the results and the fact box.